Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee. Today is March 12th. I see a quorum is present. Vice Chair Mecklen, have you had a chance to look at yesterday's minutes for approval?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have, and the minutes from March 11th, I so move.
Members, any questions on the minutes?
One correction, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Mecklen.
On the back page, Mrs. Onning's first name is misspelled, so she needs a correction.
Thank you. Minutes as amended by Representative Mecklen. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are carried. Members, we've got a couple bills in front of us today. Our first plan is for House File 1057. If Representative Anderson wants to take the testifying stand. Members, today's plan is to lay over both of the bills today in our committee. And I will let Representative Anderson come to the table. Again, the chair will move House File 1057 to the Committee on Labor and Workforce for to lay over the table. This bill will be laid over. So, Representative Anderson, when you're ready, to your bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. And thanks for hearing House File 1057 this morning. First of all, I'd say I'm a farmer. This does not affect me. I'm kind of a mom-and-pop operation. I don't have employees, but this issue is pretty near and dear to me. I talk to a lot of farmers. I understand the farm economy pretty well, and I think we could all agree that the farm economy is difficult. Farming itself is difficult, and this bill, we do have the one exception to it now with the part-time employees, but what my bill does, House File 1057, would be to add one other relatively small exclusion for farms that would have fewer than five or fewer full-time employees. And I would characterize those as small to medium-sized operations that would have full-time employees. And a lot of these farms don't have HR staff, for example, or people on staff to do their accounting, and it's just another layer that they have to do, and we would really appreciate this exclusion to the earned sick and safe time. A lot of these farmers take care of these employees very well and get time off if they need it, but during the busy times of the season, spring, planting time, fall harvest time, the employees are there and do the work that has to be done, because Mother Nature lets us work when she wants to let us work. So anyway, Mr. Chair, I have a couple of testifiers to go on this bill on House File 1057, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I do have a couple testifiers here. Let's start with Commissioner Blissenblock, if you'd come to the table, Commissioner. And then on deck is Darren Broughton. So if you want to come forward, Darren, feel free to grab a chair next to Rep. Anderson. And good morning, Commissioner. Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Baker and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I am here to testify with the department's concerns on House File 1057, the bill to exempt individuals employed on certain farms from earned sick and safe time. Based on Minnesota unemployment insurance data, the department estimates that there are about 1,500 establishments and 2,500 employees that would be impacted by this change. This is likely an undercount because not all agricultural establishments are reflected in the unemployment insurance system. DLI is concerned about the negative impacts this bill could have for those workers. The earned sick and safe time law sets a floor for all employees in the state. The floor is 1 hour for every 30 hours worked, up to 48 hours of sick and safe time in a year. This floor was created to ensure that workers do not have to choose between their paycheck and recovering from an illness, caring for a child during a school closure, or seeking assistance due to domestic abuse. This floor was designated to not take into account employer size or sector, to recognize the fact that workers have the same needs regardless of the sector they work in or the size of their employer. One of the department's main concerns with exempting these agricultural workers from the ESST law is that agricultural employment is hard, sometimes dangerous work. These workers do labor-intensive work that is prone to repetitive motion injuries, respiratory illnesses, and toxic chemical injuries. These workers need earned sick and safe time. All workers need earned sick and safe time. You may have seen a recent post from the Minnesota Department of Health's website indicating that avian influenza or the bird flu is an occupational hazard that impacts agricultural workers. The CDC recommends that these workers exposed to bird flu stay home and isolate. Earn Sick and Save Time doesn't just benefit these workers, it benefits public health by giving these workers a means to stay home when they should. Finally, I want to note that the department has technical concerns about how five or fewer employees threshold would work. Agricultural work is highly seasonal and the number of employees fluctuates frequently, which could make it difficult for an employer or the department to determine whether employees are entitled to Earn Sick and Save Time. Thank you for the opportunity to testify about the department's concerns with House File 1057.
Thank you. Representative Frazier, did you have a question for the commissioner? Okay, thank you. We'll come back to you then, okay? Thank you. Next up, Mr. Broughton, please introduce yourself and carry on.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Darren Broughton, Executive Director of Minnesota AgriWealth Council, a coalition of more than 150 farm organizations, agribusinesses, and allied groups and businesses across the state committed to advancing food and agriculture here in the great state of Minnesota. I'm here this morning to testify in favor of House File 1057. And here's the reason why. Minnesota is among many states in the midst of a great farm recession. Inflation, extreme weather events, major health, animal health outbreaks, turmoil in global markets, disruptions in food and supply chains have created a perfect storm for Minnesota farmers and the local businesses that serve them. On average, net farm income has decreased nearly 24% in the last 2 years, and there is no relief in sight for 2025. And coming out of a great farm recession will not be easy, but there are some things, some significant reforms and tweaks to current laws that Minnesota can do in a very bipartisan manner to help rebound our farm economy. One of those items is this modest change to Earn Safe and Sick Time. It's important to recognize that family farms operate very differently than a typical business. These farms often are managed and operated by multi-generational family members, brothers and sisters, cousins and uncles, who share not only the work, but also the financial risks and rewards. The collaborative and intergenerational nature of family farms sets them apart from other industries. On a family farm, the lines between personal and professional lines are often blurred. Family farmers work together to maintain their livelihood, making their labor contributions deeply personal and intertwined with their home life. If a family member falls ill, others can quickly step up and cover those duties, ensuring the farm continues to operate smoothly. Farm work also means that certain tasks, like milking cows and feeding livestock, must be done daily, and finding temporary replacements with the necessary skills and knowledge is often impractical and costly. Farming is extremely hard work, with numerous factors outside of a family's control. No better proof than that, that Minnesota has lost more than 13,000 farms since 1997. That's 4 out of every 25 farms in the state. That's why this modest change to Earn Safe and Sick Time is so important, because our farms are so unique. And that would be a powerful message that this legislature could send this year to Minnesota farm families. Thank you. I also want to state that Minnesota Farm Bureau, who could not be here today, is also in favor of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Broughton. Welcome, Mr. Bruce Clevin is our final testifier today that have signed up ahead of time. We'll ask anybody in the audience if they want to speak to this bill as well. Mr. Clevin, good morning. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Clevin, I represent a number of ag groups. Specifically, for the record, I'm representing the Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers this morning, Minnesota Turkey Growers, Minnesota State Cattlemen, that's the beef cow folks, and then the sugar beet industry in various forms, the Red River Valley sugar beet growers up north, Mindac Farmers Cooperative around Wahpeton, and then the Renville plant Southern Min, which both Representative Anderson and the chair have members in. And so this issue has come up quite a bit at board meetings and member meetings in the past year about the compliance with this. And so I'm simply here to support the bill today. Also to point out to the members that this concept isn't completely new. It is kind of to the House, but the commissioner's concern on seasonality is on line 2.1. This was passed last year. The 28-day exemption was designed to pick up that seasonal harvest help. So both of you would recognize the beet trucks, for example. We bring a lot of people in October for about 2 weeks, 14 days if the weather's good, maybe 20. And so the 28 days was designed to pick up that last year. And before the Senate hearing, and I know I'm a registered lobbyist, so I can't mislead you, but I went through the engrossments in the Senate last year, and everything on lines 120 to 2.2 were passed by the Senate last year. At least that was my review of the engrossments, and if House Research wants to check my work, they can. But in conference, the 28 days survived, and the five employees or not didn't. So this did have some life last year, just so members know.
Well, thank you, Mr. Clavin, for your testimony. In the audience, are there any other members of the public that would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, member questions to the bill. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Can you tell me, I see that this is about small farmers. Can you give me, give us some examples? I didn't see any letters in our packet here from any small farmers, but can you give us some examples or anecdotes of how small farmers have been harmed when they've had to provide these ESST days?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As it pertains to earned sick and safe time?
Yes, ESST. Yes, earned sick and safe time.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, again, the reporting requirements just went into effect, I believe, with the third quarter of last year. And again, it's an additional bookkeeping situation. And I don't have any specific examples of how a farmer has been harmed by this. I would add that I would think with the language calling for five or fewer employees, we're talking, I would say, to a great extent, a dairy operation that would have people that are on staff year-round, a livestock operation, a hog operation, for example, that would have need for employees, and that would be how I'd respond to your question.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this has been in place for about 14 months, and I was hoping that you would have a real tangible example of how small farmers have been harmed by this. He wants to add more.
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thanks. And Representative, I do have an example. I visited with a farmer about a month ago. There's two brothers that farm in a family farm corporation. And I don't know if this is an unintended consequence, but they have never before had to pay into unemployment insurance. But because of earned sick and safe time, they now must pay into that. And they estimate about $30,000 a year, and they'd never be eligible to collect on unemployment. Is there a two-brother family farm corporation? Another one mentioned that they're an LLP, a limited liability partnership, with a few part-time employees. And they again didn't have to pay into unemployment because they kept their earnings under $20,000 a quarter. And with now a value of some vacation time, they're over that $20,000 per quarter cap and now are subject to paying unemployment for those employees.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's the unemployment insurance program. We're talking about earned sick and safe time. Is that correct?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thanks. Yes, but because of earned sick and safe time, they have been deemed eligible for unemployment insurance.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm gonna move on. I don't believe that's accurate. I'm gonna move on. Let me ask this question. If we were to put this law into effect, we'd be exempting about 5,000 employees currently, based on the math that we've looked at through research.
Yeah.
What do you say to those 5,000 workers? Don't get sick anymore. Don't make the time to take care of your family, your kids, or loved ones if something happens. What do you say to those workers?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. Again, many of these are family operations, and they fill in for each other. And before earned sick and safe time, they made it work. They would help each other, fill in for each other, hire other part-time help to do these jobs. They got along before earned sick and safe time, and I think they could manage if they were exempted from this as well.
Any follow-up, Representative Frazier?
One more. Representative Anderson, I just want to say the reason that workers have been pushing for this for so long is because they were not just managing to get along. They were potentially taking days that they were not being paid. They were looking at financial instability and financial ruin when they couldn't take pay time off to take care of themselves, a loved one. So I think it's inaccurate to say that folks just, maybe some people got along, but not all 5,000 of these workers that we're looking to exempt from this ability to take care of themselves if something happens to themselves or their family were getting along.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson, for this bill. And I'll just start with an open invitation. I know it's sometimes challenging for my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to have a full grasp of what life is like in rural Minnesota, specifically on family farms, like Representative Anderson and myself both come from. And with that in mind, I just want to add into this that in a lot of ways, this conversation, specifically over earned sick and safe time, is inserting government and bureaucracy in a way that honestly is super unhelpful to the day-to-day operations of the business. To Representative Anderson's point, in a lot of circumstances, these are so much family small businesses that are working with their employees that, quite honestly, the majority of the instances that we're talking about right now, those employees are being paid. They're being paid because the farmers take care of their workers. And this insinuation in this room right now that somehow these employees aren't being taken care of or that they're unable to bring their kid to the hospital or whatever the circumstance might be is frankly really tone deaf. It's really tone deaf to the farmers and to all of the people who work to provide for our food security. So I'll just add that this is a good bill. This has bipartisan support. And I really encourage support of this. So thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this forward. And frankly, if there were workers who were concerned about this very bill that Representative Anderson is bringing, then they would have been here to testify to say it.
Representative Pete Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Baker, Representative. just to follow up a little bit on Representative Frazier's line, is there anything when we talk about those small family farms that just have a couple of folks working there, they're all related or closely tied together. Is there anything that requires them to actually take the sick leave and get paid out for it?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I believe the legislation says there are no exemptions for the size of an operation. So, yes, I would. They need to follow the law, and they would be subject to earned sick and safe time.
Representative Johnson.
So, thank you, Chair Baker. So they can accrue the time, but if they had that emergency, there's nothing that, to Representative Schultz's point of they have to go take care of family, they have to take somebody to the hospital, they don't have to apply for and put in for that paid time under earned sick and safe time. It just means that that floor is there so that they can earn it, but there's nothing requiring them to take it. They could just take the day off and unpaid if it's that, just like they've been doing it forever. It's just they accumulate this time and it would sit in the bank and go unused. Does that sound correct to you?
Chair Anderson.
I'm not quite sure what your point is, but yes, again, they've been taking care of this before. And with this added layer of bookkeeping and accounting, it's a challenge for them. And we've talked about situations before where a farm worker may work 12 hours a day, 16 hours a day, and then the next day it rains and they take the day off, for example. So farming is a different type of occupation in terms of the hours may not be set. On a livestock operation, they would be set. You got to milk the cows twice a day, three times a day, feed the hogs and such. But a grain operation, again, a lot of the work depends on the weather and when you're able to be out there and get it done. But in the past, again, farmers take care of their workers, and if they didn't, they wouldn't have workers. And I haven't talked to any farm workers that said that they needed this either. And the farmers, to a one that I've talked with, say they take care of their workers, and the smaller operations would do it without this bill affecting them.
Final, Representative Johnson.
Final, thank you, Chair Baker. Just more of a comment and open invitation. If there are issues with HR implementation or the struggle around that, I think that's a good discussion to have to make sure that we're not layering that extra burden on them and make it as easy as possible for them to record that calculation and keep track of those hours. And that's a conversation I'd be happy to have without rolling it back on the backs of the workers and the folks that do benefit from this. So I'll close with that. Thank you.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question just that we heard about sort of government intervention and government getting out of the way of farmers. I'm wondering if the folks you're exempting out of this, out of Earn, Save, and Sick, would continue to be eligible for some of the big tax breaks like the Green Acres program.
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenman. Green Acres is a term I haven't heard for a number of years. It was big back years ago when they lowered the value of farmland if it continued to be used that way. But I haven't heard Green Acres used for a number of years, and I don't see how that would be relevant to this bill.
This representative that's testifying.
Representative, whoops, hang on. We've got somebody needs to mute themselves on Zoom, please.
Please continue.
Did you finish your answer? Okay, Representative Greenman.
Sorry, let me be less specific. Would the companies and the farms that you're talking about right now that you want to exclude out of Earn, Save, and Sick benefit for their workers, would they be eligible for other government tax breaks and incentives that Minnesota gives?
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenman, you use the word tax breaks. I rise up a little bit about that. Farming is a difficult occupation, and this country has realized that we need a safe, abundant supply of food. And I think you're implying that there's a lot of hands out getting a lot of freebies from the government, and I take exception to that. This would not exclude a farmer from any government programs that are available to anybody else.
Final, Representative Greenman.
Thank you. That's exactly the point I'm making, what you just said, which is it won't exclude farmers from any government program. I support those programs. I also think that farm workers deserve the same benefits that everybody else gets. So that point you're making is exactly why I oppose this bill, which is to say, when we talk about, I don't believe that government incentives to do things that we care about are freebies or handouts. I believe they're investments we're making, whether it's in our farms, whether it's in our workers. And that's why this bill, to me, is very, very problematic. Yesterday, we heard a bill about worker safety where we all, in a bipartisan way, in a unanimous way, voted for it because what we heard families tell us is that without government intervention, employers weren't going to do the things that made workers safe. This is Earn, Save, and Sick Time is about making sure that workers don't have to come in sick, that if someone at their home is sick, that they can provide for their sick kid, or they don't have to go and work sick. This is a safety issue. This is a worker safety issue. And when we talk about as a committee what we need to do, we need to listen to those parents yesterday. We need to listen to the workers, and we need to say we absolutely should be supporting our local farmers. We should make sure that the farm share is bigger than it is. We are doing all sorts of other things in other areas on the farm economy, but balancing that on the backs of farm workers who deserve the same thing as every other workers is wrong, it's unacceptable, and we shouldn't do this. Members, you should vote no against this bill.
Representative Pinto. Okay, thank you. And Representative Frazier, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just quickly. I mean, I've heard some comments come in that this is an example of government getting in the business of small business owners. I mean, we have plenty of government programs, and I'm hoping I'm not hearing from my colleagues on the other side that we should get rid of programs like Medicaid or FMLA or ADA, because all of those programs are necessary in order to ensure that workers can do what they need to do and take care of themselves so they continue to be the stable force that is required for small businesses, big businesses, in order for them to do the work that they do. So I just wanted to make sure that to put that on the record, because I'm hoping that that's not what I'm hearing, that we need to eliminate all of these programs.
I've got two more members. Representative Wayne Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative, come forward. I just want to build Representative Schultz's invitation. I know a commissioner that is a well-known farmer in a fifth-generation farm, small farm, that is called on for many reasons whenever there's questions regarding farming. Is there has to be an understanding, and I think there is a lack of understanding, of what a small farm is. And who is actually doing this farming? You were talking about the farmer who is probably getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and working until sometime into the night. And then this is about extra administration costs that are being put on this. It's either the farmer doing it once he gets at home, dead tired, looking to get up again at 4 o'clock, if, you know, or his spouse or wife that is trying to do the paperwork. A lot of the people who are working part-time on farms, and I'll use him as an example, somebody that is going to college, that is going to for environmental or agricultural studies, and they're looking to work on a farm for a period of time. So these are like internships. These are people that are just working there temporarily as they move on, and they know what they're getting into. We are talk about trying to prevent, and I know there's another committee on that thinks that every farmer is this mega farmer that has thousands of acres, and a bulk of farms that including Washington County are very small farms. Washington County is built by a lot of farms, and they are one, two, three, maybe they lucky enough to have a son that stayed around. And I don't, and we have to understand they don't have the same infrastructure, the bookkeeping, all that stuff. And the people that are coming to work for them are coming to work for them with full knowledge that they're not going to get the benefits of working with 3M or Best Buy. They don't want to. Nothing. And so the recognition is what they're receiving on these farms. And I just think the continuation of putting extra burden, extra paperwork requirements on people who, A, people know that they're not going to have those benefits coming in. They don't plan on staying there more than a few months. They may work during heavy harvesting time. They don't need to be there during planting time. And there needs to be an understanding that not every company is a Fortune 500 company, and that people who work there understand that. We have to stop continuing this desire to drive small businesses and small farmers out of business and buying and then selling to these mega farm companies that are not giving the opportunities to a lot of these young kids that are around the communities. And that's basically what this is an understanding of that these small farms are already burdened, barely hanging on, and giving them an opportunity to continue into that next generation, which we celebrate. If somebody's been around for 100 years, we do all in at the county level because it's so unique and different nowadays. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That actually concludes our member questions. So closing comments, Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If I could just take a second and try to explain, you know, out in greater Minnesota, our population densities are much less than here in the metro. Where I live, my closest neighbor lives a mile away. My point is that people that live out there and work out there are valued because there's not a lot of people out there. Farmers take care of their workers. If they don't, they'll lose them. And I've talked to dairymen that have had the same people working on their farm for 15 years. They take care of them. That's what farmers do with their workers. They're people that show up and do the work. This appears to me to be a solution looking for a problem, that farmers do what they do. They treat their employees well, and they've gotten along and they would continue to get along. And with the added expenses of record keeping, and the farmers I talked to said because of this law, they were drawn into having to pay into unemployment insurance. That's what the farmers told me, and it was going to cost them about $30,000 a year, and would never be eligible to collect because they're a two-brother family farm corporation. So, members, again, it's been spoken very well of what farming life is like. It's different than living in a more crowded metro area. The number of workers is not that large. They're valued very well. And I would just, again, ask for support for House File 1057, Mr. Chair.
Thank you again, Chair Anderson, for bringing the bill forward. The Chair will renew the motion that House File 1057 be laid over for further consideration. Thank you very much. Chair Anderson. Next up, House File 1325. Representative Schultz, if you could head to the table. The Chair will move House File 1325 again for consideration to be laid over. I do see that there's an author's amendment, Representative Schultz. We can get that the bill into the shape of your wishes. Members, any thoughts? I think we'll just go to the question on moving. Oh, we got to move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would wish. So, members, all those in favor to approve the House A2 amendment to House File 1325, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The bill is now amended. Representative Schultz, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Lead Pinto, and members. This morning, I'm glad to introduce House File 1325, a bill to help support our small businesses, our property taxpayers, our public employers like our schools, counties, and cities as we seek to make the earn, sick, and safe time workable and flexible. But before I go further, I just want to quickly provide a little bit more about my own background. I work in my family's Main Street small business in my hometown of Uppsala. On an annual basis, I work for a half dozen other small businesses in every corner of the state. One of the greatest honors of my life has been to serve the interests of small businesses. I've been elected as the president of a statewide organization of over 200 small businesses in this state, and I currently serve on the board of directors of a national organization of over 2,700 small businesses. Listening to the needs of small business owners and locally elected leaders across Minnesota, I have heard the concerns of unfunded, one-size-fits-all mandates, which is exactly the challenge we are seeking to address today with Earn, Sick, and Save Time, which is a state policy that passed without one bipartisan vote. Not one Republican voted for this policy. Today, the bill before us is a big contrast to that, as nearly every provision found inside this bill has bipartisan support as we seek to craft state policy to benefit small businesses, schools, public safety, and ultimately taxpayers and consumers. This unfunded mandate over these areas has caused higher costs, it has caused property taxes to rise, and challenges for our incredible workers who are seeking to do their job to serve consumers and to serve the public. But you don't need to take my word for it. I'm eager to hear from our testifiers today who will share the story of why making these common sense changes to ESST will benefit Minnesota for years to come. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Members, we've got about 12 or so testifiers signed up. I want to try to do a three-minute hard stop. So if you see the yellow card go up or the blue card today go up, it just means that we're asking you to wrap it up in 10 seconds. So I want to be a little bit more clear today. I want to give plenty of time for member questions at the end. So trying to get that through. So our first up, again, Commissioner Blissenblock, if you would come forward. And on deck is Lauren Schockhorst from the Minnesota Chamber. If you could take your seat there, too. Commissioner, welcome again. Please proceed.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Baker and members of the committee. Again, my name is Nicole Blissenbach. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I am here to testify in opposition to House File 1325, which modifies Earn Sick and Save Time, or the ESST law, which went into effect on January 1st of 2024. The Earn Sick and Safe Time Law, again, sets a floor for all employees in the state. That floor is 1 hour of Earn Sick and Safe Time for every 30 hours worked, up to 48 hours in a year. This floor was created to ensure that workers do not have to choose between their paycheck and recovering from an illness, caring for a child, or seeking assistance due to domestic assault. The bill before the committee today would exclude minors, part-time and seasonal workers, and others from Earn Sick and Safe Time coverage. These exclusions would eliminate employment protections for approximately 800,000 Minnesotans, which is about 30% of the workforce. In fact, eliminating this coverage would give these workers less protection than existed prior to the passage of the Earn Sick and Safe Time Law. Without these protections, it is legal for an employer to fire an employee for being sick or having to miss work to care for a sick child. These excluded workers perform similar work to their coworkers, contract the same illnesses, are exposed to similar workplace safety hazards, and yet, under this bill, they would lack the same benefits and protections as full-time workers and adult workers they are standing shoulder to shoulder with. This bill would also allow employers with fewer than 25 full-time employees to pay Earn Sick and Safe Time at half of the hourly rate as an employee earns from employment. If this proposal were to become law, it would introduce complexity, and the department would have to engage in rulemaking to clarify how this provision would work. Defining how this employer size threshold would work in practice would be a significant challenge for employers around this size, as their FTE count may exceed 25 for a portion of the year and then fall below for another portion. This would also make it difficult for employees to understand what their rights are at any given time. Finally, I want to highlight that I have serious concerns about the penalty waiver provision, which provides that DLI may not issue a penalty until January 1st of 2026. The department already has the ability to work with employers to come into compliance with the law without issuing penalties. The department specifically focused the first year of Earn Sick and Safe Time implementation on compliance assistance to employers. There are several examples of this in the Earn Sick and Safe Time report that was published by the department in February. However, if the department does not have the authority to issue penalties, then the most egregious cases of noncompliance will go unchecked, and the employers who have made good faith effort to implement Earn Sick and Safe Time will be competing on an uneven playing field with those who have not. I am sympathetic to the concerns that have been voiced by employers, and that is why the department advocated for some important modifications last legislative session that were specifically requested by employers. We've received positive feedback in response to those changes. We are always open to additional suggestions to make it easier to provide this benefit to workers, but strongly oppose any attempt to remove a certain subset of workers from coverage. The ability to take time off of work for illness or injury without risk of losing a job should not depend on where you work or how old you are. I want to encourage employers and employees to visit the department's website for any Earn Sick and Safe Time assistance. We have frequently asked questions, checklists, videos in multiple languages, workplace posters, and more. The department is committed to making sure all employers have the tools they need to implement Earn Sick and Safe Time successfully. I want to also share that I've had conversation with the author and look forward to continuing those conversations. We all share the goal of wanting Earn Sick and Safe Time to be as easy as possible to implement, as this benefits both employers and employees. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 1325, and I will remain in committee if there are any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up is Ms. Schotkorst with the Minnesota Chamber, and then Ms. Schaefer is up on deck. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schotthorst, and I'm a policy director for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, a statewide organization representing more than 6,300 businesses and over 500,000 employees across Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to share our members' support for legislative modifications to the Sick and Safe Time mandate. While it is well established that our members are opposed to the idea of the state mandating an employer benefit, policies that help employees shouldn't have to create an undue or uneven financial burden on employers. In the last 2 years alone, of the roughly 35 new mandates that have been placed on business, the Sick and Safe Time mandate has burdened our members the most. Many of them have struggled to understand compliance regulations, as the state has been slow in providing guidance to all of the employers across the state. In particular, Minnesota's smallest businesses do not have HR expertise on staff, and keeping up with the number of new workplace laws has been overwhelming and confusing, with the onset of paid family medical leave and changes to unemployment insurance and other impending requirements that seem duplicative. You heard a little bit about that confusion earlier today. But today I'm going to discuss some, but not all, of the areas our members have identified as challenges or have turned out to negatively impact their employees as they're managing the sick and safe time mandate. First, the decision to apply sick and safe time rules beyond the mandate to employers voluntarily offered more generous PTO plans is causing employers to restructure those more generous PTO policies to be more restrictive, which is an unfortunate unintended consequence of the new provision due to the liability it now imposes on those policies. In addition, I have previously shared with this committee the collective feedback from our members is that the sick and safe time is being misused by employees. Leave use patterns have started changing due to this mandate, causing legitimate and operational challenges and cost impacts across the board. This is largely due to the fact that the mandate is so broad and the rules for requesting notice and documentation are so limited. We are hoping to refine some of the notice and documentation provisions to address employer workability concerns this session. Another area of improvement for employees would be to permit prorating of front-loaded hours for employees who start in the middle of a benefit year so they can access time up front versus being placed on an accrual schedule. This would also benefit employers who would like to choose this option from an administrative standpoint. Finally, in looking toward the future, we think exempting small employees in their first year would help ensure those employers are better positioned to comply in their second year. We appreciate that a number of these recommendations are included in House File 1325 and look forward to your continued support of these recommendations and others to balance the sick and safe time in at this legislative session. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Lisa Schaefer, welcome. And Meg Luger-Nicolai would be up next. Go ahead, Ms. Schaefer.
Thank you, Chair Baker and members. My name is Lisa Schaefer, and I'm the Human Resources Director for the League of Minnesota Cities. We appreciate the conversation brought forward today by Representative Schultz and would like to express our support for House File 1325. The League provides human resources assistance to our 841 member cities across the state. For the past two years, we have been fielding calls from staff and council in cities large and small, concerned about the new legal requirements in the Earned Sick and Safe Time statute. City employees provide services that are essential to the health and safety of the public. Historically, cities have offered generous sick and paid leave to employees, often significantly over and above the number of hours required under the ESST statute. Often, that additional leave time was previously bargained for with unions in good faith based on the legal requirements in effect at the time. As written, the statute requires cities to apply the expanded allowable ESST uses to those leave hours the city already provides over and above the number of hours required under ESST. This has resulted in significant confusion regarding the administration of paid leave. It has also led to significant uncertainty regarding the impact to the delivery of important city services and to city budgets. For these reasons, the League supports the provision in House File 1325 that removes language from the effect on more generous sick and safe time policies section of the statute. The League and cities across the state also support the change made in House File 1325 to the weather event exception section of ESST. The current language allows certain employees, such as firefighters, snowplow drivers, and 911 dispatchers, to be exempt from ESST requirements during a weather-related emergency. However, if those same employees are unionized, the statute requires the city collectively bargain with the union in order to use that exemption for a weather-related emergency. Eliminating the bargaining requirement will ensure that city services can remain operational so that the city can effectively respond during a weather event. This concludes my testimony. Thank you, Chair Baker and Representative Schultz and members of the committee. I'm happy to answer any questions there may have.
Thank you, Ms. Schaefer. Appreciate that. Ms. Luger-Nicolai, I hope I got that close. And then Mr. Elliott, if you would come forward as well. And please continue.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You got the name right. My name is Meg Luger-Nicolai. I'm an attorney for Education Minnesota, where we represent. Thanks. Sorry. We represent 85,000 school professionals. Thanks for the help with the microphone. I'm still going to criticize the bill.
That's quite all right.
The problems with this bill are legion from our perspective, and there is basically nothing in it that we support, especially as amended. For one thing, it exempts workers under 18, which reverses strides that we made 2 years ago to recognize that, for example, students are workers, sometimes breadwinners in their household, and may need for unemployment or other workplace protections. Secondly, part-time workers, like many of our paraprofessionals and nutrition services staff and some of our teachers, can get sick and still have to take care of children. Exempting people who are working over 50% of a normal work week will end up exempting many fully employed people because most part-time workers work more than one job. Some people could be working 50 hours a week and still be excluded under this bill and unable to use ESST to take care of their family. And it could make it harder for employers to recruit part-time employees. Also, this language will make it impossible for a parent to use ESST to care for an adult child with a disability by striking through adult child and legal ward. If your adult child with Down syndrome needs to visit, for example, a cardiologist, not really an unrealistic scenario, this bill says that that kiddo is on their own or that you can be fired for missing work for that reason. We have fairly harrowing testimony on the paid family medical leave bill from a grandmother who's taking care of her adult son stricken with stage 4 cancer and also caring for his children. Her heroic work would be rewarded by being exempted from this bill when she needs to take her son, for example, to a doctor's appointment. And this bill reverses major strides that we made on recognizing differences in families. It basically punishes anyone whose family doesn't look like Beaver Cleavers. We also don't support the modifications to 181.9448 subdivision 1. This changes little for employers because it pertains to leave that is already booked at a loss on their balance sheets. The marginal effect is greater for employees who actually need to use this leave. And so it's important to think about, you know, what are we getting for employers? What are we taking away from employees? It's not really commensurate in any way, shape, or form. Moreover, we obviously are not concerned with the need for accounting or additional labor for payroll clerks or other human resources professionals. This law either requires you to subtract from 80 or divide by 30. And I think most farmers, most employers, most cities, most municipalities can do both of those two things. You know what? I'm a plaintiff's side attorney. If you want to bar the department from collecting fees and issuing fines, that actually just pushes the work to my sector where we will also collect attorney's fees. So that part I can probably live with. That is sarcasm. Please don't do that. It is important for the department to use its teaching function as an agency, and actually that is probably a less expensive way for employers to comply with this law or learn about not complying with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Brian Elliott from SEIU Minnesota, and then John Welsh, if you could come forward, that'd be great. Thank you. Mr. Elliott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brian Elliott, and I'm the executive director of the SEIU Minnesota State Council, representing nearly 70,000 essential workers across Minnesota. I've also been the lead policy advocate for Earn Sick and Safe Time at the state and municipal levels here in Minnesota for the past 10 years. It's hard to cover all of our concerns in the time I have, so I'll simply start with the most important principle about this policy. No one should be fired or risk being unable to feed themselves or their family because of a short-term illness. That's what we're talking about. Up to 6 days a year. Or because they need to care for a sick family member or they've suffered domestic abuse, sexual assault, or stalking. Unfortunately, this bill would take sick and safe time and its accompanying protections away from many hundreds of thousands of workers who've already been earning this benefit for 14 months. That's an enormous share of the 900,000 workers who didn't have sick and safe time before 24, many receiving it for the first time in their working lives. I can count 600,000 workers who would be told that their work doesn't matter as much, that their illness is less serious just because of how many hours a week they work for a given employer, or because they work less than 5 months for a single employer, or because they're under 18 and somehow their contribution to their family income isn't as important. Same thing with more than 640,000 workers who work for an employer with fewer than 25 workers, so their sick time is only worth half as much. But the real count is actually higher than 640,000 because this bill uses FTEs as opposed to a headcount. I don't have data on how many workers are related to their employer or who work for a new business whose owners, by the way, could very well have had multiple well-established businesses already, or who has more than one job but none for more than 25 hours a week. And I don't even know how to figure out which workers might somehow work less than 520 hours a year, but who aren't already excluded by the 25 hours a week or 20 weeks per year language. So as a result, the compliance and enforcement problems this bill would create are an absolute nightmare, where different workers and employers are treated differently and neither knows what provisions of the law do or don't apply to them at any given time, and where that lack of clarity actually results in more complaints to DLI, whose investigations will be even more complicated, and where employers can be penalized or cannot be penalized until next year, even for willful or intentional violations like retaliation. And to close, who's going to educate all of our workers and employers on this baroque new set of rules and how to navigate their own compliance? Because the current law is actually pretty straightforward. 1 hour earned for 30 worked with yearly rollover options to make tracking even simpler. And if you've earned the hours, you can use them regardless of how long you've been working for the employer. I run a small nonprofit, including myself, 7 employees. I have no HR department and have been doing this very simply for years using a spreadsheet that took me 10 minutes to create. We're only talking about 6 days a year for a full-time worker, less for a part-time worker, and we know from 15 years of employer-provided data that actual use is just 15 to 19 hours per year for a full-time employee, because workers see this time as an insurance policy and they want to save it for what they need.
Thank you.
My members work in nursing homes, hospitals. We do not want to give them the incentive to go to work sick. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. All right, thank you. And Mr. Welsh, welcome. Next up, we've got a pair for Walter Fromm and Jean Bulcher. If you want to come up maybe together when he's ready. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Welsh.
Thank you, Chair Baker and committee members. My name is John Welsh, and I'm a nurse on the cardiac floor at Unity Hospital in Fridley. And I'm also chair of the Minnesota Nurses Association's Governmental Affairs Commission. I'm here to speak against House File 1325 and its proposed changes to the state's earned sick and safe time. Our nurses at Unity have greatly benefited from the new ESST law. Previously, we had one of the harshest attendance policies amongst the hospitals in the metro area. Dozens of our nurses were caught up in our disciplinary process for chronic illnesses or just from raising children who got hurt or sick at inconvenient times. I sat in on numerous disciplinary hearings for good nurses who provide excellent care but were now in their manager's office simply because of bad luck, like a sick kid. The result was that because they feared getting disciplined, many of our nurses were coming in sick to work or ended up just leaving the hospital or going on to casual status. The new law that went into effect January 1st changed that. Today, if I'm sick and I have the available PTO available, I can stay home and recover without fear or discipline or retaliation. Weakening this earned sick and safe time law is going in the wrong direction. For example, one of the proposals in House File 1325 would eliminate workers who worked less than 25 hours a week on average. This would impact many in healthcare, where very few frontline staff members work 40-hour weeks. This provides healthcare workers flexibility while caring for their communities. I'm 59 years old, and I've been a nurse for 16 years. The work takes a toll on our bodies, lifting patients, maneuvering them in bed, or even catching a stumbling patient. My back has paid a price for the job I love. I work what they call a .6. That means, and many other nurses across the state, will work 6 8-hour shifts in a 2-week pay cycle, or 24 hours a week. This gives my body a chance to recover after consecutive shifts. This assignment also allows me the opportunity to have another job I love, which is teaching nursing students at St. Kate's. Many of my work coworkers work .6 assignments to care for their children or loved ones, or maybe they're phasing into retirements, or they're like me and helping teach the next generation of nursing students. Those of us who work a reduced schedule deserve the same protections under the Earned Sick and Safe Time law. Thank you for your opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Welsh. Welcome, Jean and Walter, I believe, right? So go ahead and continue and introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Baker, members of the committee, my name is Jean Bueller. I'm a worker in Minnesota and a member of Take Action, and I came here to urge that you vote against any restrictions or delays to earn sick and safe time currently guaranteed to workers in Minnesota. I want to share a personal story from 2022, before all employees in the state were guaranteed paid sick and safe time. Unfortunately, I lost someone that summer who was a best friend, someone I had lived with, and a found family member. I made the decision to, out of pocket, travel to Colorado where she had died and attend a service held by her family in her beloved Estes Park. Because I was working at a small coffee shop, I had to not only pay for this last minute travel, but I also had to miss shifts at work, which there was no formal way to give up or be paid for. I received no pay for this time I was traveling. It's redundant, but my coworkers kindly took over for me while I was gone, but when I came back, my employer began to make comments implying that I had made up a story to go on vacation, became hypercritical of me, and eventually the work environment became so negative that I had to leave and lose my job. Representatives, I'd like you to imagine your best friend, someone who has been there for you in your vulnerable moments, someone who, under these amendments, does not count as your family, so therefore someone you would not be allowed to take paid, earned sick and safe time to grieve, but who has been with you while you went through the most pivotal moments of your life. If you lost this person suddenly, would you be okay in the aftermath? Would you be fit to come into work and do your job as usual? Personal time for family emergencies and emergencies involving a designated significant individual are always going to come up as a need for workers, because as much as we are dedicated individuals who have a lot to give to our jobs, a lot to give to our industries, and a lot to give to the Minnesotan economy, we are people too, and everyone deserves the dignity to have a minimum standard of paid time to deal with the many situations that life can throw at you without being bankrupted or bullied out of jobs. Please leave earned sick and safe time as it is. No carve-outs and no delays. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bueller. Walter?
No. We're sharing a computer.
So. All right.
Chair Baker and members of the committee, my name is Walter Fromm, and I'm the political manager for Take Action Minnesota. I'm here today to urge you to leave earned sick and safe time as it is written and to vote no on House File 1325. This past election cycle, we had conversations on the phones and doors with over 20,000 voters concentrated in the Twin Cities Metro, in Hastings, and St. Cloud. When we talked about earned sick and safe time, Minnesotans were overwhelmingly clear that this is common sense policy. We heard time and time again just how meaningful having time off for sick and safe time is for families across the state. I wanted to make sure to highlight two stories from our members. First is Dori Mara Cabrera, who shared the following. I started receiving paid sick days after the law passed in 2023, and it made all the difference in the world. I had to take time off to quarantine with my children when they had COVID-19, and if I had to take that time unpaid, I would not have been able to pay rent. The peace of mind knowing I could take care of my sick children, keep them quarantined, and rest of the community safe and still pay bills was huge. Second is Corinne Martin, who shared, the ability to know that I can keep my daughter safe and healthy without having to worry about losing my job or not getting a paycheck for that week is something that single and two-parent homes desperately need. There have been times when I was really sick, but I was forced to go to work because I would not be able to afford to pay rent and buy groceries if I missed just one day of work. The 20,000 voters we talked to, our 10,000 members, and Minnesotans across the state are clear that earned sick and safe time is common sense legislation that we need. Minnesotans need to be able to take care of themselves, their families, and their communities by staying home when they're sick. I am here to urge you to leave this bill as written and vote against any carve-outs or any delays like we see in the bills in front of this committee today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fromm. I'd like to welcome Jim Gottschild from St. Louis County. Welcome to the committee. Also, Nancy Miller is on deck if she wants to come to the table.
Thank you, Chair Baker and committee members. My name is Jim Gottschild. I'm a Deputy County Administrator for St. Louis County. I'm testifying on behalf of AMC and MICA, and I would like to start my testimony. I'm going to focus primarily on two areas, the weather-related exemption and the more generous paid leave policies application. Minnesota counties support sick, earn sick and safe time. We support paid leave We've provided much more generous paid leaves than are required by law for many years. We appreciate certain clarifications that were made during the last legislative session, which included the rulemaking authority for the Department of Labor and Industry, as well as some of the clarity around things like base pay. We appreciate also the compromise that was reached during the last session regarding at least having the ability to have a conversation about weather-related exemptions and what we would consider emergency employees. Unfortunately, the requirements to bargain explicit references in order to give authority that would make public employers like counties to have weather-related exceptions proved to be a much greater challenge than what we had anticipated. Now, prior to ESST, Minnesota counties have had policies. We largely consider them to be emergency conditions policies, which have identified what do we do in the event of a snow emergency, for example. And in many cases, there are certain classes of employees who are carved out who have to report to work. These are our law enforcement employees. These are employees that work in our 911 dispatch centers. These are employees who staff our jails. And these are the employees who plow the roads. And if we think back just a week ago today, the small snow emergency we had in the metro area and the impact that it had, imagine for just a minute if all the employees who had the ability to take ESST leave did not report to work, did not plow the state highways, did not plow our county roadways, did not plow our city streets. The snow event is what closed the schools. It's our snowplow drivers, our first line of public safety, that opened the schools, that opened the daycare centers. And as you know, sometimes that's the best meal of the day for, you know, children that, you know, live in our communities. We need to get the children to school. To get the children to school, we need to plow the roads. And it has been very difficult in obtaining some of the necessary bargaining language to make these essential employees. The same language that counties had adopted in their own emergency conditions policies for decades. Is it fair? Is it equal treatment for all of our employees? Because largely other employees can take the day off and they can use their accrued paid leave. They could mobile work. They could choose to report to work. It is just very much a challenge for us to conduct the work that we need to do to support our communities if we don't have the ability to get to work. Moving on to the effect that ESST has on more generous paid leave policies.
If you could, if you could kind of come to closing, thank you.
Counties have been much more generous than ESST. St. Louis County offers our employees up to, we can carry accrual balances that exceed thousands of hours of paid leave. We don't have employees who don't have the ability to take time off. It's when we have to apply all of the conditions that create these new intersections that make it more challenging to administer a workforce. And so we appreciate the amendments that were added to House File 1325. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gottschall, for your testimony today. Next up is Nancy Miller, and on deck is John Besche. Ms. Miller, go ahead.
Thank you,
and welcome.
Chair. Good morning, Chair and committee members. I appreciate the time to be able to be here with you. I did make the 2.5 hour trip to do this. It is my first time, so I apologize if I'm a little not eloquent in my words. But I own a human resources company in Wilmer, Minnesota, where we serve upwards of about 70 employees. I don't serve the thousands and the 10,000s and the 100,000s of people that people have been talking about this morning. I am on the front line with 70 different employers, including ag, cities, manufacturing, hospitality, nonprofits, retail, anything that is out in West Central Minnesota, as their HR person to the level that they need me to be. I have a staff of four other people that we help these employers write their ESST policies and tell them what they need to do and not need to do. I'm here in support of House File 1325, particularly the prorating and the documentation requirements. We see a lot of fraud in certain industries where people will call in later and totally miss their shift, and you've seen that they've been different places, maybe on Facebook, or others know that they, you know, oh yeah, I went here and there, and I still get paid for it. I still get my ESST. I'm not responsible to my employer. I don't need to show up because guess what? I get this free time to be there. So we do see a lot of fraud in this too. I believe that the documentation requirement would help to curb that a little bit. But employers are frightened. They're frightened to be able to discipline their people when they know that there's fraud there. They don't dare say anything to their people when people have been offended this law and this privilege, this benefit. So I'm here to support the prorating, and it doesn't make any sense if an employer wants to give somebody 80 hours a year and they have to give 80 hours on December 1st. It just doesn't make any sense. They can give it to them on January 1st. I believe that the Department of Labor said, they said, well, you can do the accrual first, and then you can do it. Well, if you've got a professional sitting there and you're hiring him to come in and or her to come in and work for you, oh, I'm sorry, we're going to give you one for 30 for the month of December, and then we're going to change you over to 80 hours as of January 1st. The administration is just not acceptable. It's difficult. There is a lot to administer these rules and these laws. So I am here in favor of 1325.
Thank you very much, Ms. Miller. Appreciate your visit today. Mr. Beshe, if you would start, then also Emily Herman will be on Zoom after Mr. Beshe. So welcome, Mr. Beshe.
Good morning, Chair Baker, Lee Pinto, and members of the committee. My name is John Beshe. I am the State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Minnesota. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to provide comments in support of House File 1325. House File 1325 proposes modifications to Minnesota's ESST mandate that are crucial for offering a more practical framework that considers the needs of both employers and employees. The existing ESST mandate in Minnesota poses significant workforce and financial challenges for small employers, most of whom are already struggling to keep their businesses open in the face of chronic worker shortages and shrinking bottom lines. This bill, as amended, makes several important changes to make the ESST mandate more workable for small businesses. This proposal amends the mandate to allow small employers with less than 25 employees to pay a minimum of half the regular rate of pay for ESST hours. This would move Minnesota closer to ESST mandates in many other states, which provide relief to small employers in the form of outright exemptions, requiring only unpaid time off, or reducing the number of paid hours that small employers must offer. The bill also provides needed balance to the notice and documentation requirements. Under the current law, small employers are required to provide notice of ESST rights under the threat of significant penalty. This bill would allow employers to require advance notice of at least 2 hours prior to a scheduled shift to receive ESST, while providing reasonable accommodation if the need arises within 2 hours of the shift. Similarly, employers would be permitted to require documentation for ESST use starting on day one, and employees would be required to submit documentation in a timely manner to receive paid ESST. We think that both of these are reasonable requests that encourage communication between the employer and employee and minimize the potential for any abuse. Finally, we think it is fair to allow employers to require a waiting period on ESST during the first 90 days of employment. 90-day waiting periods are very common, and several other states with ESST mandates allow for this. A waiting period would provide employers with the flexibility to manage staffing and training effectively by ensuring that new hires are integrated smoothly without immediate leave disruptions. We are supportive of many other aspects of this bill, such as the optional use of ESST during the first year of operation, the ability to prorate front-loaded EST, and some of the additional exemptions. However, in the interest of time, I will conclude by saying that House File 1325 represents a thoughtful and necessary step towards refining Minnesota's ESST regulation, and we strongly encourage the members of the committee to support it. Thank you all again for the opportunity to share comments this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Beshe. Appreciate that. Emily Herman is on a Zoom call with us, and she'll be joining us. And then Kim Lewis, if you would come forward. That'll be our final person that was on the list. And then, we'll call for anybody from the public who wants to speak to this. So, Ms. Herman, if you can hear us okay, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives of the committee. My name is Emily Herman. I work with Prior Lake Savage Area Schools and Human Resources. I want to start by saying Thank you for all your hard work. I completely understand the complex nature of balancing multiple needs, and I think you've heard some really great testimony today showing that there's many different perspectives on this bill. I would like to just present today some of my perspectives with managing ESST from a school district in regards to a couple of the different provisions. First of all, the change in the definition of an employee. Two of the main things that have been extremely confusing and complex for school districts to administer is anything around stipend positions and substitutes. So stipend positions by nature are not subject to the same tracking attendance or adjustments for missed time. So these employees receiving their stipend regardless of their absences has created an undue burden for ESST that for a problem that didn't previously exist. Also, a major concern has been around finding substitutes. We have struggled with that, with the increased amount of leaves in the system. Even though we're adding more substitutes every year, we continue to find that we can't keep up with the amount of leaves that we have throughout the system, making it very difficult to ensure that we have qualified adults in front of our students every day. The addition of administering ESST for substitutes, especially in cases where we've had to find a substitute for a substitute, has added considerable logistical challenges and strains on school operations. And therefore, the additions of line 2.23 to 2.26 make sense in our opinion. The second I would like to talk to is the proration. Greatly appreciate the gratitude for a consideration of a proration. A lot of our existing paid time off provisions have existed around proration around FTE that allows for employers and employees to be able to have the access to that leave right away, but on a prorated basis so that the implementation is straightforward in existence with our previously robust paid time off procedures that are already in existence. Third, I'd like to talk to the 90-day waiting period as a welcome provision for employers. Currently in Prairie Savage Area Schools, this is not something that we implement, but I have heard from a lot of my colleagues that this would be something that would help address the concerns that they have experienced when employees start with them, immediately take all of their ESST, and then leave right afterwards without completing any meaningful period of work. So this would be a welcomed provision that a lot of my colleagues are very supportive of. I would just like to ask for some clarification on the changes to the written documentation be included. I understand the additional need for documentation, as some of the presenters have already stated. It would be helpful for employers to be able to follow up with that. With the written statement by an employee must be allowed to be in writing in the first language and not be authorized or in any particular format seems to conflict with the new addition that a written policy containing reasonable procedures. So I just would ask that be clarified so that we know when implementing, if we can require specific procedures for written statements, that is clarified in legislation so we know how to move forward. In closing, I just want to thank you once again for your efforts on reviewing these potential changes to important legislation. As I have shared in previous testimony, we deeply value the well-being of our staff. Our robust paid time off programs in school districts prior to ESST were a testament to that commitment. We have spent numerous hours negotiating with our local bargaining units and employee groups to meet their needs within our financial and operational constraints. While we strongly support the overall goals of ESST, I urge legislators to consider reducing the mandate in ways that allows for more flexibility for local bargaining units and employers to have the benefit discussions at the local negotiations table. I would also like to respectfully request that the same considerations that were provided to the building and construction industry be extended to the public education sector for those same reasons. I understand that this might not be feasible this year, but I hope this remains an option for future consideration, giving many school districts existing collective bargaining units and employer contracts already meet the intent of ESST without adding the additional complexities of the limitations around this mandate that have already caused undue burden on already strained school districts. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Herman. Appreciate that. And finally, Ms. Kim Lewis, please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Baker and committee members. My name is Kim Lewis, and I'm here today on behalf of several organizations, the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and the Minnesota Rural Education Association. Together, we are responsible for the governance and management of our 331 school districts across Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to provide feedback on House File 1325. We appreciate the ongoing dialogue and the efforts to provide a solid benefit for our employees while also recognizing the unique challenges faced by school districts. Ms. Herman did an excellent job, and I'm going to just echo what she said. The definitions of employees are very helpful, especially for the minors under 18. We do have several students that are working in our school districts in a casual or summer environment, and that's very helpful. And of course, a stipend position such as coaches. Typically, they don't involve attendance tracking, and then of course, substitutes have historically worked without paid time off in exchange for the flexibility to accept assignments as needed or desired. Subs are an additional cost to school districts because we have to have someone in that place. And given our current states of financial affairs, we do look at that very, very closely. And then in the case where we, as she mentioned, we have subs filling positions for subs. So we have a teacher that puts in for a substitute. That substitute will then call in and use ESST, and we have to find a sub for that sub. So it becomes a cascading effect. We strongly support the inclusion of a proration option for new hires or part-time employees. Since our fiscal year begins in July and the school year starts in August, like many employers, but we specifically hire staff throughout the year. And proration would allow us to allocate ESST benefits fairly based on the length of employment. And it also ensures those that join midway through the school year that they receive a proportional amount of ESST hours. And similarly, part-time employees get benefits that reflect their work schedule. We would still like to see some flexibility for bargaining. We do bargaining with our local units, and many school districts already have agreements meeting or actually exceeding the intent of ESST. And additional mandates place undue burdens on already strained districts in that area. Finally, I was very pleased to see the amendment this morning on the effect of more generous sick and safe time. We believe it helps align more closely what we believe was the original intent, was providing earned sick and safe time to employees who did not already have access to such benefits. Many, many school districts already offer very generous sick time policies, and we did not oppose this bill initially because we knew we exceeded the 80 hours that was in place. And our employees sometimes have hundreds of hours. They've been with our districts for years, and they've accumulated hundreds of hours. And with last year's law that passed, taking all of those personal illness and injury hours and converting them to ESST with the ability to use all of the expanded uses, we have seen increased absenteeism. We have seen some things that have made our HR departments just work a little bit harder. And we're trying to, in many areas, decrease administration rather than increase. And with the number of new administrative mandates or benefit mandates that have been placed, we're having to do more administration in those areas. So that was a very welcome provision. It would be very helpful to the school districts as well as the other things I mentioned. And with that, I'm happy to conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Appreciate that. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill today? Otherwise, I will close public testimony to the member questions. Any members have any thoughts on this? Lee Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Schultz, thanks for the discussion about this really important issue. I guess one thing that jumped out at me in the course of the conversation, maybe I'll just first confirm this. So I don't see a Senate companion to the bill. I feel like I heard a comment at the beginning. You described the bill as being bipartisan. Maybe if you can just sort of comment on those two points.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lead Pinto. And really looking forward to our discussion that I know mm-hmm. that you and I are going to have, yep. and I'm sure Chair Baker as well, throughout the entirety of this session to help bring about some of these common sense changes. Specifically, the companion bill, to answer your questions, the companion bill for this bill will be introduced later this week by a group of senators. The original bill, before we amended it, was something that I had from last year. There are provisions that we amended into this bill that have bipartisan authors and it comes from a bill that is moving in the other body, introduced by a Democrat. And then other provisions that are included inside this bill were debated in this committee, in the Labor Committee, a year ago. We took a vote on a DE amendment that I brought, and it also received a bipartisan vote in that committee. So that is almost every provision inside this bill has received bipartisan support. Thank you.
Lee Pinto.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz. So uh, I, I get concerned as I was listening to the testimony. I feel like we end up having it's challenging with this issue because I feel like there ends up being some misunderstanding, I don't know, misinformation necessarily, but there was a comment, I think, towards the end of the prior bill that we'd heard about, you know, an employer that's eligible, where an employee becomes eligible for ESST, for example, that somehow pulls the employee into the UI system if they weren't in that system already, which, as my understanding of it, that's not actually true. And I feel like there were several other things I heard that kind of just made me feel like we're not understanding. There may be sort of some misunderstandings. My understanding, Chair, is that this bill is being laid over, so the conversations will continue.
That is correct.
Yeah, thank you. So maybe rather than getting into a ton of detail, I'll just note that when I hear testimony about potential misuse of ESST by employees, when I hear testimony about that somehow ESST might force employers to provide less generous benefits to employees, those are places where, and we are having conversations with Reverend Schultz, where certainly open to conversation about if, in fact, either of those things, I don't know that either of those things is true, we're part of the process where we're going to have the conversations. That's all well and good, we'll have that. I think it's important, though, that we ground ourselves in, and I really appreciated the statement by Mr. Elliott in the testimony, that there is this basic principle here, right, which is nobody should be fired or risk being unable to feed themselves or their family because of a short-term illness, the need to care for a sick family member, or because they've suffered domestic abuse, sexual assault, or stalking. So to the extent that there is some way that the program is not working as well as it could to achieve that goal, that's going to be a conversation members of this committee should be having. To the extent, though, that we're backing away from that principle, and Representative Schultz, you said it yourself, and I think you were saying it in one tone, but I want to kind of send it back another way. You said not a single Republican vote for Earn Sick and Safe Time. And to my mind, I think you kind of expressed it in one way, but for me, that is a really damning statement, because that's a core principle that I just said that I would hope we all could agree on. So I guess I want to just, for all of us, as we enter into these conversations about ESST and chair on paid leave tomorrow, that to the extent that we're talking about improving programs that meet that principle, that is something we should be doing. And to the extent that colleagues may have voted against those bills previously, hopefully they now recognize the value of the principle, we want to improve that. But to the extent we're going to be backing away from that at all, we really want to be careful and cautious about that. And so when I look at your bill, Representative Schultz, I just see a number of provisions that, in fact, back off from that principle and that say that a worker is a human being in each of these different settings, and yet somehow their need to be able to care for themselves or their family member is somehow different depending on what kind of employer they have or what kind of situation they're in. I just don't see that at all. I don't buy that. And I'll just close with this. I know this will be an ongoing conversation. I was struck by the testimony of the woman from Take Action talking about her friend, and that was really moving. And I'm not sure where you're sitting, but I thank you so much for what you shared. I may have had to leave. Yeah. And it just struck me as, even as something as simple as the family definition, you know, I think we've all been at points in our lives where we may have somebody that we are the caregiver for that person. And especially with the increase in isolation and loneliness in our society, there's a lot of folks who are with people who are like, there's nobody else that they can depend on except for the person they're living with or their friend. And if you're not there for them, that is going to be a real problem for them and a real problem for you. And so I guess I just want to make sure throughout this conversation we center the humanity of the people involved. And if we're doing more to center that humanity and make the system better, that's great. But I just have to say right now, to the extent that we're backing off from that and treating human beings differently depending on who they happen to be employed by, that is going to be a real problem for me and I think for my DFO colleagues as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Lee Pinto. I don't know that I heard a question. I think it was more of a statement. And I'm sorry. Representative Pete Johnson is up.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Representative Schultz, we've heard from a number of testifiers about how they already offer a benefit that's more robust than the CST benefit. They should be allowed to be exempted out or not have to follow this. But then in the same breath, they talk about how this benefit is such a burden and people are using it. So that would be indicative to me that maybe the benefit that they offer isn't remotely close to the benefit that ESST offers. So can you help square that up as to if they offer a benefit already, how is it creating more problems?
Representative Schultz.
Yeah, Representative Johnson, in hearing the spirit of your question, I think the truth is in the middle. And I think that we're committed to finding that this session and working together to ensure that in the cases of state policy matching with policies that individual businesses or employers have in place, that we're not adding an additional burden from the state level, so that specifically consumers and especially property taxpayers aren't having to pay for an additional stacking benefit that has already been collectively bargained for.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Could you expand on how this impacts property taxes?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you listened to the testimony today from public employers in particular, this is currently the current law is a one-size-fits-all approach that has resulted in additional costs to every public employer without a way to pay for it. And so that the way to pay for it is only through property taxes. While this has only been in law since January 1st of 2024, we don't yet know the full picture to the cost that this is going to be for every different municipality, which we're seeking to address in this bill for the long term to make this program flexible and workable for Minnesota workers and for Minnesota employers. Thank you.
Representative Johnson, follow-up?
Yep. Thank you, Chair Baker. A couple of follow-ups here. Is there anything in the current ESST law that prohibits employers from disciplining an employee for abusing earned sick and safe time or sick time?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you restate your question, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Chair. Is there anything in the current law that prohibits an employer from disciplining an employee should they abuse earned sick and safe time, i.e. take it for the wrong reasons?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually think that that's an area that does need to be addressed a little bit, and maybe you and I can work on that together.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I'd be happy to chat with it. My understanding is they can discipline somebody if they misuse that benefit. And it's something that, you know, I encourage my members to, if they're going to use sick time, they better use it appropriately. So next question. We heard a little bit of testimony about the essential worker portion of this and how we want to carve them out even further of, you know, even being able to negotiate what that looks like. We talked about the snowstorm that happened. When that snowstorm happened, did the roads get plowed?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I'm assuming you're talking about last week when we had a little bit of a challenge getting into work, and I will share for the record for you that I drove through unplowed roads to get here that morning.
Representative Greenman, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. But the plow drivers still showed up. Granted, they didn't have everything plowed by 7 o'clock in the morning, but this theory that because there's bad weather, the workers are not going to show up is not the reality. There's occasions where some of those workers maybe it is impossible to show up, and they might be held distant. Like, we get 3 feet of snow up in Duluth. Regardless of what kind of vehicle I drive, I'm not going to be able to drive down to the fire station. So I, under this law, could take time in order to stay home versus be disciplined for missing work. Do you view that as being a problem where workers genuinely can't get there? My experience is when we've had issues like that, workers have made heroic efforts to get to their jobs because they know how important it is. That's part of the reason that drives them to do that work.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, being someone who engages greatly with emergency responders, those across the board and across the state, frankly, I think that whether it's snowplow drivers or firefighters like yourself, I think they do excellent work and intend upon doing their job. I think that this bill helps get at the concerns that I've heard from local elected officials that this is currently language that needs to be changed to help make this more workable for the people of Minnesota. Thank you.
Anything
just,
final?
I'll just close. Okay. Thank you, Chair Baker. I think it's important to really work hard to separate concerns from what the reality actually is, because we can create concerns and fear all the time. Doesn't always match the reality. What I have heard a lot in this committee is this constant drumbeat that every time a worker needs to be away from work, it's a problem. And we have created this culture where we only value the workers while they are working. and they are not humans outside of that. They are just a cog in a wheel, and if that cog is missing, that is a problem, and it needs to be replaced. I think we need to do a better job of addressing that and valuing workers for what they are. I think that's what ESST does. It gives them that opportunity to be humans and continue to be workers in the long run, and I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, I just want to direct you to a portion in the bill, lines 4.31 to 4.33. Got it?
Yep.
Thank you. So it reads, for an employer with 25 or fewer full-time equivalent employees, accrual of earned sick and safe time under this section is paid at half of the hourly rate as an employee earns from employment. In my read of that, does that mean that an individual that works for an employer of 25 or fewer full-time equivalent employees, they would be, their hours would be half of what their hourly actual hourly rate is that they work?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, part of this bill, Representative Frazier, is helping make this a more workable program for the small businesses across the state, which is the vast majority of employers who have to compete with the likes of mega billionaire businesses. And frankly, we need to have the backs of our small businesses. And the goal here is to create a framework for our economy in Minnesota that benefits the growth of small businesses. As you have seen, frankly, in the last couple years, our state has become very unfriendly to the building of new businesses and support for small businesses. We have completely dropped out of where Minnesota used to be, and it is my goal to get us back to a place where Minnesota is the number one place to start a business, to build a business, to grow a business, and especially small businesses, because those are the primary employers of all Minnesota workers. Thank you.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was a great speech. Thank you, Representative Schultz. But I just want to know if you can answer to me why the labor of those individuals would be considered less than individuals that work for bigger corporations.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've answered that question.
Representative Frazier.
I didn't hear an answer to that question. I heard a good speech, but I didn't hear an answer to that question.
Anything further, Representative Frazier?
Yeah, so just for the record, there is no answer to why the labor of those individuals would be considered less than the individuals that work for big corporations.
Representative Schultz, you want to follow up on that?
Yeah, the only other thing that I'll say, Mr. Chair, is that the goal of this bill is to help small businesses, to make our economy work, and in particular for all Minnesota consumers to have more affordable products, goods, and services, and so that we can have a more affordable way of life here in Minnesota and ensure that small businesses are able to compete in a place that is continuing to see consolidation to major big businesses across our state.
Final?
Just final comment. I think workers are looking for decency, humanity, and be treated with respect, not a good speech to small business owners.
Representative Frazier, I think what I'm hearing, too, is just flexibility, and we need to kind of talk about that at some point. So we're getting there. This is laid over. This is what this is intended to do. So Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, I think, for calling out what really is happening here, which is when we talk about small businesses, we need to make sure, and we heard this on paid family medical leave, that they can provide the same kinds of benefits and to attract workers. We know that there's a workforce shortage, and so when we talk about supporting small businesses, we need to ensure, and so we should look at the things that support small businesses that deal with the consolidation. That's not ESST, to be clear. But I actually have a question for you about other folks. In this bill, one of the things your bill does is it carves folks out. And so I'm wondering, my reading of this is that if you are 17 years old, you could get fired for being sick. But if you're 19 years old, you couldn't. And is that your reading, and are you okay with that?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing in this bill gives license to any business to fire an employee. Thank you.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of Earn Safe and Sick, part of the law we passed, so the law, what is law now, and it's been law for 14 months, protects people if they get sick and need to get that time off and be paid for it. Protects them both from being able to pay the rent and from being fired if they call in sick. In this bill, Two years ago, under the leadership of Representative Kozlowski, we said every worker gets the same standard of minimum wage. We're not going to exclude folks who work at small businesses. We're not going to exclude folks who are underage because we think it shouldn't matter where you work or how old you are or who you are. You should get the same protections. That's what Earned Safe and Sick Time does. And the thing that I heard, and I think picking up where Representative Johnson left off, is instead of actually talking about this bill, we're hearing a lot of imagination. I heard, imagine a world. This has been law for 14 months. And this last year, we actually, kids got to school, kids got fed. All of those things happen. And in fact, we have heard in other committees testimony that it has been easier to recruit bus drivers and school workers because of unemployment insurance for hourly school workers. And so we hear a parade of horribles, but we actually need to look on the ground now, 14 months in. We're not imagining things. This bill has been in effect. Workers are able to take time off. We have PFML. People are about to be able to have that benefit. We have Earned Safe and Sick. We have hourly school worker UI. And we are giving kids meals. So I think when we think about what we should be doing here and what this committee has done, all of those things except for it was a different committee that did universal meals. But we're doing the work to ensure that our schools have the workers that they need, and that the workers can take care of their families. Because when we talk about their small businesses, their clients, their customers, their communities are those workers. And they need to be able to have resources. They can't miss a paycheck if they have to take care of their kids. So I guess the last thing I will just say, because I feel like when we ask questions, we get a lot of flowery speeches, but not clear answers about this bill, is that you said, and I think Representative Pinto brought up, Lee Pinto brought up, that you bragged that not a single Republican voted to ensure workers and their in their own districts that workers can get Earned Safe and Sick Time. That means employers can fire employees for being sick. Kids can get fired for being sick because they're not over 18. Workers who have to put together multiple part-time jobs can get fired for being sick. Won't be able to pay their bills if they get sick. Vulnerable workers who are working seasonal jobs could get fired for being sick. That is not something to brag about. What is something to brag about is that we're ensuring that people can live their lives, can take care of their families, can do and be a part of their community. That is what this bill allows folks to do. And by bill, I mean law, because it's been law for 14 months. So again, members, this is a bad bill. It is trying to undo things that workers across our state in every district in the state rely on. And there is a reason that there are no Democrats on this bill, because we don't believe in rolling back things for workers. And I think we would be the first state in the country to roll back this benefit after we've given it to folks, because people know in every developed country in the world, you should be able to get sick and not have to lose your house, your job, or your ability to provide for your family. Members, vote no on this bill.
Two members left. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Good discussion. Representative Schultz, thank you for bringing this bill to make something that we all can agree on, that I would agree, Representative Greenman. Every single person, I think we share the agreement that if someone is sick, we want them to be able to be with their family members. I think that's just a basic thing we agree on. It's just how we get there. And honestly, I have a lot of thoughts, but this narrative of worker versus employer is frankly just very, very disconcerting. So I'm going to talk about some realities. I'm just going to talk about the reality of what is happening right now. And the lens I have is the school district perspective. So Monday I shared with an MSBA panel, they were asking about paid family medical leave, earned sick and safe time, and my thoughts and just my perspective. And I had just come from school where I had scheduled a number of meetings where I will be telling people that they don't have a job next year. That's the reality. So if we want to talk reality, that's the reality. So those conversations are happening, not only because of laws like ESST, but paid family medical leave. There is, so I think it was Representative Johnson asked about the tax impact or the, you know, the reality. The reality of it is many of our bargaining groups have already collected bargained benefits equal or better to this. Many of them have. We heard from cities, we heard from counties, we heard from school districts, even townships have talked to me about this. School districts don't have the authority to just levy for increased costs. Others do, schools don't. So there is a tax impact on that. So our communities will feel that. There is a lack of clarity amongst my colleagues about what we can and can't have a conversation to someone who's gone. And I could go through a list of examples of just my own experience, but when I go down and I have a conversation with a teacher about, hey, why were you gone? What was the issue? It's after I have had ongoing concerns with that. So this assumption that school districts or cities or counties are going to punish people, it is just false. If there's a pattern, we're going to start with a conversation. Say, hey, is something going on? Can I support you somehow? That's how good employees do it. But we've gotten into this place where we're legislating by pendulum. And it's just not helpful, because downstream, what happens is we end up having to make very difficult decisions at the business level, at the school district level. We don't want to eliminate positions, but when we make decisions and we don't listen to people that actually have to implement it, we listen to activists instead of people that actually implement, we have issues. So I just want to thank Ms. Herman. If you haven't read her testimony, I'd encourage you to read it, because she talks about this balance of trying to get this right, meeting the needs of employee groups while also understanding the financial and operational constraints. One of the things that doesn't get talked about is the human cost. And we had a testifier here from I believe it was Becker Public Schools, and she talked about just the burden. And here's the part that stuck out to me the most. Becker Public Schools said, we will have to hire more HR staff, more district office staff, because of laws like this. Representative Schultz is trying to correct some of that. So when a district is forced to hire more HR staff, there's less teachers. Class sizes go up. That's what happens. That's a reality. If we want to talk about reality, let's listen to people that actually implement this. Thank you.
Thank you. The members have all done. A closing statement, Representative Schultz. Again, this bill will be laid over, so just go ahead and close it up.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the comments made around the table. I really appreciate all of the testimony, and I'm glad that we heard what has happened over the first 14 months. Because there are concerns, there are challenges that it is right for us to work on together. I think I've even heard from your side of the aisle that there are ways that we can work together on this, and I'm committed to that. I really am. I we are seeking balance. We are seeking common sense. We are seeking to pass a piece of legislation to add to state policy for the reasonable employer, the reasonable employee, so it works for them. That's the goal. And I appreciate this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for laying it over.
And thank you again, Representative Schultz. Just to the members, too, I think what this is really trying to get to is, I think a lot of comments that, again, Lee Pinto made and others, the spirit of this is right. What we're trying to bring today and tomorrow with conversations about ideas is about some flexibility that we're learning that are not working. 14 months out, we are learning that there are some abusers. Not all of them, but there's some abusers. We have to just address some of these issues. There are issues that are affecting where employers have been offering these kind of things, and if we tweak the language, it is not going to put further burdens on them, again, with hiring more staff to be able to manage more of the vacancies in schools and so on. Today and tomorrow is about the flexibility that we need, not to take away the spirit of what we're trying to do. We're not repealing this current law. We're not repealing paid family tomorrow. But we need to talk honestly about sometimes there are edges that we need to talk about. So to laugh at this idea that we're just trying to hurt people, we're not. Because employers, if we can't offer some things for a real small employer, they always have a chance to go somewhere else. So with that, members, I appreciate the bill coming forward. I will make my motion to make House File 1325 be laid over for further consideration. With that, members, tomorrow we have a House File 1976 on the docket. We are adjourned.